Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee. It's April 17, 2007. And at this time, I'm going to open as a subcommittee of the committee, and we're going to consider Senate Bill 1043. And Senator Atkinson, if you'll come up, we'll open that public hearing. Hold on to 1043 first. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Vice Chair, member of the committee. For the record, I'm Jason Atkinson, State Senator from Southern Oregon. 1043 is a bill that is very exciting to me. It is a bill that I don't want to tell you how important it is to me because I don't want to paint a target on it per se, but it's a bill that that I worked very hard to have a bipartisan bill on. And out of this bill came a hunger caucus. And this is one of those ideas that came to me early in the morning where I said, well, why don't we do this? And if you all know,
we're waiting for the committee.
Good Senator Burdick to arrive.
First time all week, anybody's
and Senator
good.
Starr, we now have a quorum.
All right.
Good morning, Senator Burdick.
All right, good morning, Senator Atkinson.
We have a quorum in this committee. We're still hearing 1043.
Allow me to restart over for all those glorious words that I've already laid out. So I certainly don't want Senator Burdick to miss them. Anyway, this bill was a bill that I asked myself, well, why don't we do it? And so I started working very closely with Senator Starr and several other senators that you'll see on both sides of the aisle, both in the House and the Senate, to create a bill that would use what every politician uses, which is the political tax credit. We all use this as a way to motivate people to contribute to campaigns. And my life was very much changed several years ago when I was asked to speak to the Gospel Rescue Mission for Thanksgiving. And instead of going to Thanksgiving with my family, I went to Thanksgiving with the Union Gospel Rescue Mission. And at that time in Grants Pass, it met in this very bad building. And I met with all these guys. And I have to tell you that even having been raised around the concept of always giving back and always serving, that made a huge impact on me. And through that work, not only with that Gospel Rescue Mission, but rescue missions all over the state, we've seen a huge change in the management of Gospel Rescue Missions, one of the biggest and actual nationwide models a fiscal turnaround has been the Gospel Rescue Mission on Burnside in downtown Portland. Working with an organization called Mission Increase and also working with some foundations that our own Senator Johnson is involved with, they were able to turn it around. And so what Senator Starr and I started to talk about was, well, how can you do this, number one, on a bipartisan basis? Number two, how can you use the same political tax credit that politicians use and apply it to people who are hungry and needy and homeless? Because quite honestly, $50 to a political campaign or $100 of a couple to a political campaign helps us buy stamps, but more importantly, it could be the difference between somebody sleeping in a bed or sleeping on the floor or sleeping outside, or as all three of you know so very well, some of the greatest increases we're seeing in the population of the hungry and then the homeless are women and children. And so we created this bill, and I'm very, very excited to bring it to you because I think what this bill does is it certainly fits within the policies of both the executive branch and the legislative branch as it relates to hunger. But it also is a way for us to tell the people who are doing the real work. And I single out the Gospel Rescue Mission, but they're not in the bill, per se. But to single out the very people who are changing lives one at a time. We wanted to make sure that this bill applied to what we know in Southern Oregon, in Jackson County, as the Dunn House, which is a safe home for battered women. And would that same concept apply to battered women all over the state and all of the various areas, because as the bill is written, certainly those homes And those safe houses also have a food and feeding element to them. So it's broad by design. It's narrow in its application of using the same political tax credit that we use for campaigns. I think Senator Starr has coined an even better phrase for that. But we're very excited to bring it to you, and I'd be delighted now to turn it over to the junior senator from Hillsborough.
Junior senator.
Thank you. For the record, I'm the junior senator from Hillsborough, Bruce Starr. Junior only in that I came to the Senate after the good senator from Southern Oregon. I represent the communities in Western Washington County, Hillsborough, Cornelius, Forest Grove, and North Plains. I'm here to testify in support of Senate Bill 1043, and I want to thank Senator Atkinson for his leadership in bringing this bill forward. You know, I, like Senator Atkinson, have been involved in working with folks that are on the front lines dealing with folks in need in our community and really across the nation. I see this as an opportunity to take another step forward to help those in our community that are in need. Oregon taxpayers are generous. Oregonians are generous. And currently donations to food banks and shelters, charitable organizations like are identified in this bill. You can make contributions and those are deductible. But I think it's important for us to take this next step, at least for a portion of those, and make it a tax credit for a dollar and dollar credit against Oregon taxes owed. Just like as Senator Atkinson mentioned, we do as politicians, as legislators and candidates, we go out and raise money on the political tax credit. It's a tax credit that's loved by conservatives and quote liberals alike. Both legislators and organizations out there use the political tax credit to raise money. We, in a way, and I think the term that Senator Atkinson was referencing, we in a way have welfare for politicians as it relates to the tax credit. How much more should we provide that opportunity for folks that are on the front lines helping our fellow citizens? Senator Atkinson relayed a story of a Union Gospel Mission experience that he had. I, on the other hand, spent some time down in Biloxi, East Biloxi, Mississippi this last summer, not as a legislator, but as a guy with a hammer in his hand and working alongside some of my friends from my local church that went down to do relief work down there. And I got to know a young man whose life really was turned around because of the Portland Union Gospel Mission. And, you know, he clearly benefited from having an opportunity to enter into a program that really helped to turn. I mean, this man was on his way to his grave. If he hadn't gone to his grave, he would have been in prison. And luckily for him, he made the trip from the South Oregon coast to Portland and got involved in the Union Gospel Mission. And now his life has changed significantly. You know, we talked a lot about in this building about hunger and the fact that we have way too many of our fellow citizens that are hungry. This bill specifically mentions food banks, and you know we have those in really throughout Oregon. Most familiar with how that operates in Washington County, though I know we have those opportunities throughout Oregon. Colleagues, I think this is simple. It's easy to understand. You know, we don't have an exact fiscal on it. Obviously, there will be some. But it's going to be minimal in my mind because there's already these donations are tax deductible. So it's just an initial or a next step, I think. And I think it'll be a small increment. And at some point we can get the exact amount, I believe. Shouldn't be that difficult to determine. I think this is important. I think it's a way to help serve our fellow Oregonians. Appreciate the opportunity to testify this morning.
Question. Yes, Senator Monroe.
Well, thank you for bringing this bill to us. For more than 10 years, I've served on the Board of Fish Emergency Services, which, along with SNOCAP, are the two main agencies that provide food support and also some housing and utility support for people in Multnomah County that are needy. This would be a big boom. Mm-hmm. I'm on the finance board of FISH, and we manage the endowment and the investments and so on, and always try to encourage people to leave us in their will and things like that. And as a result, we've built up over $500,000 to help support the agency. But it's on a shoestring, and most of these relief agencies are really on a shoestring. They just scrape by. FISH Emergency Services, 94 cents out of every dollar that we're donated goes to direct support. Only 6 cents is for overhead. The poor executive director, Gloria, she's wonderful. She's been on the job for a long time. She's really underpaid, but she has it in her heart to do the work that she does. So this bill will really help. I think it'll make a big difference. I mean, I've been contributing every year to FISH Emergency Services besides my time, some money, and now I can take credit for that money that I give. That'd be a good deal. So I think this will be a real plus for the state of Oregon, for people all over that care about the needy and that want to help them. So thank you very much.
Mr. Vice Chair, if I may respond to Senator Monroe, there's a lot of good pieces of public policy in this. First of all, as you hit on the head so well, there's no waste in how these dollars are used. I would encourage everyone, in fact, we want to do this when we get the bill passed, to start a tradition from the Oregon Senate of going down and helping with lunch at the Salem Gospel Rescue Mission. A couple things about it. They have a similar percentage where over 90 cents of every dollar goes in. They are run by a gentleman now, the executive director, who when his first involvement with Gospel Rescue Missions was, he was homeless. And he was pulled in there, and now his life's been turned around, and now he's executive director. So that is being duplicated. And the better part about public policy of all of this is that it's limited. It's the same welfare for politicians amount. However, the dollars are spent directly and quickly. They don't get filtered through. They don't go through any kind of task force or anything. And the person who's contributing, if it wants to be to the Dunn House for battered women, if it wants to be for the Gospel Rescue Mission, if it wants to be for loaves and fishes, it's not a lot of money, but it certainly helps. And here's the other part that helps. And I mentioned Gospel Rescue Mission on Burnside, who went through a huge, I don't want to say corporate turnaround because they're nonprofit, but essentially from my training, what they went through is a corporate turnaround. And what they got themselves into was a situation of always having to fundraise, and in that endless cycle of fundraising not keeping up with capital. Well, they slowly got that turned around. Now they're in the black for nonprofit. But what this allows every nonprofit to do in Oregon is to do what all of us do, which is give someone an incentive to contribute. And so for those smaller contributions, $30, $50, $20, or $100 for a couple, now you have on, as we just experienced today, yesterday when taxes are due, now on those end of the year appeals, you have that incentive if someone's on the margin. So it's direct, it helps with fundraising, and here's the last thing about it that I'm so proud of. And this is, if you look at the bill right now, this will be the only bill this session where you see Buckley, Atkinson, Hunt, Minnis, Morissette, Starr. And that's by design. I mean, that there is no other bill in the legislature that looks that way. Now, here's what I'd like to do. If you could please help us move this bill forward, I would like to add every member of the Oregon Senate's name to it. This was not done to slight anyone. This was done just to make the statement of Buckley, Atkinson, Hunt, Minnis, Morissette, Starr. I think that's just kind of special in its own way. But I'd like to add every member of the Senate to it. This is not partisan. This is direct. This is the same welfare for politicians that goes on the ground. It's a great idea. It's a very simple idea. And it could mean the difference between, you know, women and children not eating one day, and it could go the difference between somebody sleeping outside versus sleeping in an overly stuffed rescue mission somewhere in Oregon.
Mr. Chair?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Frank Shields, of course, is going to be really excited about this. I communicate with him pretty regularly. When I first got to know Frank about 25 years ago, he was a pastor of a small church in southeast Portland, and he had a homeless meal every Wednesday night. And he did that for years and years and years. And then he got on the board of FISH, and then he got me on the board, so he's kind of responsible for my involvement. And then when I was on the Metro Council, I was able to get a grant to FISH, a significant grant, so that they could buy a walk-in freezer. We did this because, in the name of recycling, because they could then acquire food, perishable food that would otherwise be thrown out, and put it in their freezer and use it for people. So I was able to help them as a Metro Councilor. And now when I vote on this bill and put my name on it, I'll be able to help them in this way. And this will be very meaningful. And I can tell you right now, the campaign is going to be underway for us publicizing this credit and trying to make the fiscal impact greater than what our staff will tell us it is.
Mr. Vice Chair, members, one additional piece, and I appreciate Senator Monroe's comments. I believe we're in the period of the calendar. It's National Volunteer Week or recognition of volunteerism. If it's not this week, it just occurred. I might be off a day or two. But I'd like to just also tie the reality of when folks are willing to give their $30, $20, $50, $100 to a nonprofit, It provides that link to that nonprofit, and I think it heightens the opportunity to not only have dollars flow, but actually hours and volunteer time. And I think that in light of our society today and how everybody is busy, I think that if we can encourage that volunteerism, and I think that this bill does that as well, I think that's an additional side benefit to the bill. So I just wanted to mention that.
That's great. Yeah, I think this is great. I've been writing the budget for our church for the last 8 years, and I got FISH written into our budget. My church donates $100 a month to FISH as a portion of our budget, and I've been trying to encourage other churches. It's an ecumenical thing. I mean, FISH is sponsored by churches of all flavors, and this will fit right in. This is going to be great.
Well, thank you. Thank you for hearing the bill. And if there's anybody that doesn't think this is an important bill, just have them at lunchtime walk down, I think, four blocks from here to the mission and just walk in. And I believe that within 90 seconds, they'll support this bill.
Before you two get away, I think one of the important points about this bill is the fact it's going to be on that tax form. And a few years ago, Senator Starr will remember this, we became really concerned about what had happened in Klamath Falls with the shutoff of the water. And a local radio station out in Washington County in the Senator's district began a little program for us, and that was to raise awareness and to solicit help for the food bank down in Klamath Falls. And if you walk in my office, you're going to see something on my wall thanking us for what we did. What was a shock to me, because I was not aware of the multiplier as to how many dollars for Washington County, Yamhill County, probably Multnomah County also, and all the other areas that they covered with their radio station. The money that came in yielded $500,000 worth of food and supplies for those families down in Klamath Falls who were hurting so badly. And if you have this on a tax form, you're going to raise that awareness one more time, and that, you know, this is a good thing. It also gives everybody a chance to get out and talk about it. And just as we saw there, folks at one end, one corner of the state responded to the other corner of the state, and it was really a big help. So thank you guys for the bill. Is there anyone else out there that would like to testify in Senate Bill 1043? If not, we're going to close the public hearing. And we're going to now open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 902, Senate Bill 903, Senate Bill 904, and Senate Bill 585. Tell us where we are.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, in your packet, there's a sheet entitled Senate Bills Affecting Capital Gains Taxation, and it's kind of a red that categorizes the major components of these four bills for your convenience so that you can compare what the different bills do. So I was just going to run through that quickly. Senate Bill 585 eliminates the capital gains tax for both personal and corporations beginning in tax year 2008. That's all the bill does. Senate Bill 902 gradually phases out the capital gains rate for personal and corporate according to that schedule. In 2009, the tax rate would be reduced to 6%, and then in 2010, 4%, 2% in 2011, and then beginning in 2012, the tax would be eliminated. Senate Bill 903 also reduces capital gains. It actually, rather than imposing a different rate on capital gains, it actually subtracts capital gains for personal income taxes only. There would just be subtraction on the return. So any capital gains that were included in the federal return would be subtracted for Oregon purposes. This bill also affects corporate taxes and the inheritance tax. It eliminates the corporate excise and income taxes beginning January 1, 2008, and it eliminates the inheritance tax for those who die on or after January 1, 2008. Senate Bill 904 is probably the most comprehensive of these. It does reduce the capital gains rate just on the personal side. It reduces it down to 3% starting in 2009. And then other changes to the personal income tax system. There are four other changes. It rebases the tax brackets in 2009. What that means is that in 2009, the tax brackets would be set back to $2,000 and $5,000 for single filers and double for joint filers. It replaces the personal exemption credit with the federal personal exemption deduction. That piece is similar to Measure 41 that was on the ballot last fall. It also makes federal taxes fully deductible on the Oregon return, and it applies to tax year 2009 and forward. It doesn't make any changes for the corporate excise or income taxes, but it also eliminates the inheritance tax beginning January 1, 2009. Also in your packet, by way of background information, is a table with a bar chart on it that's entitled Capital Gains Revenue Forecast and Revenue Impacts of Reducing the Capital Gains Tax Rate. And there is such a great deal of interest in the capital gains piece of tax policy that put together this sheet kind of as a summary, and it shows the history of capital gains revenue from 1993 through 2005, and that's reflected in the bar chart, and you can see the drop-off in 2001. And then how quickly it's come back since then. And then the forecast for capital gains revenue based on the state economist's March 2007 and forecast. So you can see how it increases it by 6.5% per year. So that's kind of a long-term average forecast moving forward. And then all of the numbers down in the bottom are the revenue impact of alternative capital gains tax rates, ranging from if the personal tax rate for capital gains was reduced from anywhere to 0% to 8%. And those are the revenue impacts. One note about the revenue impacts, these are what we would consider dynamic revenue impacts, meaning that they incorporate two other effects. There's a portfolio effect in the first year of the capital gains being reduction, which would reduce the tax cut, basically all the result of the lock-in effect, all the additional capital gains that would be realized in that first year of reducing the rate. And then running it through our tax incidence model, the feedback effects are incorporated in here, too. And that's about a 10% lessening of the revenue impact, and that's phased in over a five-year period. And that's from our Oregon tax incidence model. So those are a couple notes about those revenue impacts. So that's just some background information on the capital gains cut for personal tax filers.
Very good. Senator, would you like to come back up and let's talk about yours, Senate Bill 585?
Thank you very much, Mr. Vice Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Jason Atkinson, State Senator from Southern Oregon. I have brought to you a bill that I've worked on for, I believe, four sessions now. This is Senate Bill 585. And what this bill, by way of your review, is perhaps the simplest. I would also say it's the most comprehensive. What this bill does, is it eliminates capital gains tax in Oregon. Oregon right now has the second highest capital gains tax in America. The fastest growing county in the state of Oregon is Clark County, Washington. And there's a reason for that. This is a tax that not only is regressive in nature, and not only is the highest, one of the highest in the United States, but it also is a huge crimp on our economy. So I would actually say that this is most comprehensive because it actually does the most we can do in the quickest time to insert capital back into Oregon's economy. I had a banking professor for years who was actually the dean of the graduate school that I attended, and he taught banking, finance, and law, and he had this wonderful analogy. And it's a simple analogy, but it's so true as you start to talk about the philosophies behind fiscal policy and economic policy. And he used to remind us of those balloons that would be blown up in carnivals, the really long ones. And you could fold them in any shape you wanted. You could make a hat, you could make a dog, you could make a rabbit. But his point was, wherever you squeeze the balloon, air would go. And that's really the same whether you're a Keynesian or you're an Austrian in your view or an Adam Smith, you know, invisible hand person. Whatever fiscal policy you subscribe to, everyone does agree wherever you pinch that balloon is where capital goes. And in Oregon, for so many years, because we're used to spending money and relying on this tax, we have squeezed the balloon so much that capital has gone to other states. If you look at some of the more growing and exciting economies, on a county or even a city level around the United States, you'll see states that are not listed in Oregon. You'll see states and cities like Frisco, Texas. Frisco is a place just north of Dallas that has grown beyond because they don't have a regressive capital gains tax. A former business partner of mine left down there. First thing he did, he moves into his new house. He calls me, he says, guess what we don't have? And I'm thinking, you know, garbage compactor, you know, garage door opener. He says, no, we don't have capital gains tax. And there's an air about the excitement of building into the economy there. If you look at other states that are growing and are managing their growth very successfully, you'll look at places like Arizona, Connecticut. You will also look at states such as South Carolina and North Dakota. And you will see a major philosophy change back from the very fundamentals of economic principles of if we release the tax, we'll get more capital. If we get more capital, we'll actually have a stronger government. And so this is really looking at that, as staff said, a dynamic effect upon what we do as Oregonians. Now, one of the things I think that is so fundamental about not making this complicated, not making this a phase down, not making this a task force, not making this a giant look research interim work group, is the fact that our economy needs capital, needs it quick. We have a burgeoning two Oregons that are growing, and it's not the two Oregons that we always talk about between the urban and rural, or the north and south, or the east and the west. The two Oregons that we're talking about are the employed and the homeowners versus the people who serve them and rent. And one of the reasons we have this growing divide, especially between the rural counties and northern Oregon, is the fact that through capital gains, if you look back, you're going to see that effect having a huge investment and a huge tack on of price to home, to commercial, and also to business taxes. And as it was said, whether you're Republican or Democrat, we all plan for taxes. We all know what the rules are in our own specific state, and we make investment decisions based around that. Well, the fact that we have such high capital gains tax in Oregon is actually having the reverse effect of what we all say we want by having Oregon, my Oregon, in communities such as Medford, communities such as Klamath Falls, and communities such as Bend. I've lived in all three of those. The most briefly, certainly, my wife's actually lived for quite a while in Klamath Falls. But in all three of those, you have the same effect that I'm trying to fix, and that is the very wealthy who can afford and the unemployed or the employed in the service communities who cannot afford homes, cannot afford schools, cannot afford to be in those communities. I believe all those things center around from the second highest capital gains tax in America. And so it is with that I bring you this bill. And by the way it was introduced, it looks like there is a plethora of capital gains tax reduction bills, but I think it makes the most sense to be the most aggressive. I don't believe, as all of you know, in task forces and all of the time wasting that we look at things and then we get to a future legislature that never implements. So this is a dynamic shift, and that's the part of the bill. I want to interject capital away from Clark County and back into Oregon.
Senator, over the weekend, I was talking to an individual, and I said, well, what about so-and-so and so-and-so? And we were naming off companies and individuals that owned them. And this person responded back to me and said, none of them are in Oregon any longer. And why did they leave? And they said they gave up that we would ever reform, you know, capital gains. And they took an enormous amount of wealth and moved it out of the state. And right now I have a small business, two folks in my district. They're being solicited right now to move that business, which I think will be very, very prosperous. They have a great product, up to the Port of Coahoma into Washington State, because when they went up there, they said they were shocked to see the comparison between where we are and where they are. Now, they're Oregonians, and they want to stay in Oregon. Are you seeing that down in your district where people are saying, okay, I'm looking to Nevada, I'm looking to Idaho, I'm looking to Arizona?
Well, yes. In my professional capability, I used to do, and before I had a little campaign last year, corporate turnarounds where I'd come in and fix companies, and we would look at everything from whether or not their marketing and branding was working down to the fiscal decisions of working with the CFOs of various companies on tax policy and insurance and everything it takes to streamline and build up the cash flow of a company. One of my largest clients that I had for about, 3 years moved. They were 30-year startup company in Beaverton, moved to Vancouver. The finance company that grew up with them from the 1960s forward moved to Vancouver. We saw some of the pillars of the business establishment, I guess, I don't know how else to say it, in Portland, recently having moved the personal residences and the businesses to Oregon. One of Oregon's greatest success stories, the Murdoch Foundation, that started is there for the development of Tektronix. For the tax benefit alone, moved the entire foundation, the second largest foundation in the region, second to that little one in Seattle called Gates something, moved to Vancouver. Yeah, that's a big thing. In Southern Oregon, we certainly see a growth and a switch of, and one of my favorite economic indicators that I always look at is first-time home buyers. I graduated from Ashland High School. Ashland High School, at the time my brother and I went through, had 5 elementary schools. Now I believe there's only 3 left because families can't afford to live in that town. Now the fastest pressure is being put on talent. We have seen a growth in Siskiyou County, which is in Northern California, but more often than not, some of the large companies are finding themselves incorporating in Nevada for tax benefits, much like the state of Delaware has done since the 1970s. There's a reason why so many corporate companies are located in or warehoused in Delaware, and it's not because Delaware's got great beaches or great parks. I'm not suggesting in any way that Oregon become Delaware or become Nevada, but what I am suggesting we do is we actually make it friendly for two different areas of the economy. The first one is business investment, and the second one is first-time home buyers. You cannot have a tax that's this high and have the policy of the state of Oregon say, well, we want first-time home buyers and everything, and then put all of the pressure and regulation we do through land use in this tax, through the capital gains tax, on first-time home buyers. It just doesn't work. I mean, it's not a Republican-Democrat thing. It just take Oregon and fly and travel with me, and I'll take you to Arizona, and I'll take you to Delaware, and I'll take you to South Carolina, and I'll show you where people are able to afford homes. And it's not, quite honestly, here.
Further questions?
Yeah. Guess I better take him along.
Yeah.
He's a nice young man.
He was bumping his finger, so I knew he was going to do that.
I absolutely. And I fought for tax reform for years. I jeopardized my previous seat in the Senate to advocate for tax reform. But to simply eliminate a tax I mean, the reason our capital gains tax and our personal income taxes are so high is because we have no consumption tax in this state. All those other states you mentioned have consumption taxes, except Nevada, of course, they live off of gambling money. And Alaska lives off of oil money. We need tax reform in this state, but it must be an omnibus package. Just eliminating one tax doesn't get us there. That just means that we'll have less money for some of the basic services that we provide. And I don't believe in the trickle-down theory. The federal government's tried that several times. It doesn't work. We do need tax reform. But the question I have is, you mentioned that you said the capital gains tax is highly regressive. And yet, the capital gains tax is paid primarily by the wealthy. To me, that's not regressive. Regressive is a tax that's paid primarily by low-income people, by the poor. So what did you mean when you said the capital gains tax is regressive?
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair and Mr. Chair. Certainly we can talk about a disagreement whether or not we have comprehensive versus aggressive tax reform, and I think that is a matter of style. And I appreciate your work on tax reform in years past, but I have not seen aggressive leadership through not only the legislative branch, certainly not through the executive branch, on what it takes to turn around an economy.
Yeah.
And quite honestly, I think when you abdicate the responsibility of the executive to the legislative branch, which I still believe and will continue to believe until we get it turned around, is the weakest branch of the three in Oregon, that we're going to see bipartisan big work groups that don't get implemented. So that is where I share your frustration, but from a different point of view. I like aggressive leadership, and that's what it takes to interject the economy. Now, to your question, regressive in the sense that certainly there is people who are paying this tax. My problem and why I believe it is so regressive is people who cannot afford also are paying this tax, and we're seeing it through whenever someone sells a piece of property or makes a tax decision, whether that be investment in business or investment in real estate or a sale or a purchase of real estate decision, someone else is going to pay that tax. And you go back to Dr. Wade and the balloon. And whether or not that is a renter, whether or not that is a first-time home buyer who's going to have to pay more, someone else is going to pay that tax. And that's what I mean by regressive. It is a hidden tax on people who cannot afford to become first-time home buyers or people who cannot afford for the first time to invest in a copy machine or something else because that would grow the value of a company. You are seeing it regressive by nature because one of the things that is happening in my generation throughout our country is you're seeing people who are tremendously moving away from brick-and-mortar style businesses where there's an investment made in real estate, where there's investment made in higher payroll and building huge crews, and you're seeing everyone moving to sole proprietorships and single project-by-project-by-project investment. And you know why we do that? We don't do that because we're all just hard to get along with people. We do that for tax purposes. And it quite honestly makes more business sense to do it that way. So when I look at someone who is not wealthy, someone who worked my way through college and saved and bought our first house and all the things that we did and have done, I see this tax as being regressive in the sense that it punishes people like me who are trying to get their foot in the door because, by God, I've got to pay that capital gains tax for someone who's selling, renting, or making those decisions. So that's what I mean. And it may be a philosophical difference, Senator, between you and I on what is regressive and what is not. But I believe this is regressive.
Okay. Capital gains.
Follow-up.
Yeah, follow-up. The capital gain that most the average person realizes is on their home. And that's not taxable. If you live in that home for 2 years, you can sell it for $500,000 more than you paid for it, and you don't pay capital gains on that gain. Capital gains is something you pay that I will have to pay if I sell my apartment house, which I own, which has had a huge capital gain. So I probably won't sell it. You're right. We make decisions based on taxation. But I still believe that capital gains, and I think our capital gains tax is way too high. I agree with you that our tax system is out of balance, and that's part of it being out of balance. And I certainly support omnibus tax reform that would lower capital gains dramatically, lower income tax rates dramatically, but it has to be replaced with something. You know, that's the problem. But calling capital gains tax regressive, I think, skews the meaning of the word regressive. I have taught economics. I have a minor in economics, my master's degree, and I've studied Keynesian economics and Smith and all the others, and regressivity is defined as falling on lower-income people versus higher-income people. That's why they often say that a sales tax, if it applies to everything, is regressive, because lower-income people spend a greater portion of their income than higher-income people on those goods that are subject to that tax. Now, you can make a sales tax that's not regressive by what you exempt and by other kinds of methods, but calling the capital gains tax regressive excuse any meaning I've ever heard of that word.
Mr. Chair and Senator Monroe, Professor. It's regressive, it's regressive, it's regressive, it's regressive. And here's why I believe it, and I too share a very similar training to you. But what we've seen in the last 10 years, we saw a collapse, and we'll go a little economic theory on both of us for the belief of our other two members.
You're saying it's bad, and I agree with that.
Right. But let me finish my regressive rant for just a second. We saw a huge investment in IPO world and capital that was put into the high tech. And as high tech, what did it do? It popped. And where did those dollars go next? Those dollars next went into real estate. And what you're seeing today, and quite honestly, you're seeing in Oregon, and you're especially seeing it in rural Oregon, is you're seeing those investments that were made into real estate. And you're starting, I don't know who's behind me, but it's very difficult right now. It hasn't quite popped, but it's certainly that investment strategy from high tech into real estate has changed. And since the beloved days of the Austrians and Adam Smith, we're actually seeing investments on a state by state basis rather than on local communities. So we both agree on that. Why I believe it's regressive is because I've seen new home prices going through the roof based upon the investment decisions, whether or not to sell or to buy or to hold. And that's where I get the regressive. I have a little brother who's trying to buy a house right now who cannot do it because of those home prices. Now, where did those home prices get so high? Did they come through an investment bubble? Yes. Did they come through a tax decision? Absolutely. Is it regressive if it goes down to the very bottom person who's trying to get their foot in the door? I would respectfully disagree with you. Now, regressive, I have a 4-year-old. The governor's plan on healthy kids wants to tax cigarettes. I taught him how to smoke 2 weeks ago so he could self-insure. Now, that's regressive, too. So, I would agree with you. This is a wonderful debate. I don't believe I'm skewing the word regressive, but Senator, we're both being academics, which is okay. Which is actually the most intellectually fun part I get to have before
and I'm
you, the revenue
move
committee.
You to a Senator.
But I would say this just in response and back to the bill. I believe in strong leadership, and I believe that if this bill were to move forward, what we would actually be saying from a weak legislative branch is to a very strong executive branch, we mean it. And we actually want to interject capital. We actually want to control growth, but we don't want to give away our economy of Oregonians to Clark County, Washington. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator. I was hoping this went on a little longer because his face was about to mash the orange mark of our time.
This has been fun.
Take the second bill and completely separate it in your minds from the first bill.
First one. And
make sure that you all become co-sponsors of the first bill. Thank you.
We'll do.
All
right.
Now, if you see me stalling here, it's because the people that are on the list are Jody Weiser and Ralph Groner. And
Ralph is right.
Ralph is back. All right. I'm stalling here.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ralph Groner. I need to thank you. I have a signing ceremony on my Fire Safe cigarette in 10 minutes, which I worked very hard on. She just reminded me of my age. I needed that. Mr. Chair, I represent AFSCME, American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. My testimony on this particular issue will remain somewhat consistent. I wanted to say, but Senator Burdick's not here, since I support very strongly, as does AFSCME, the new whistleblower legislation that Senator George has proposed for public employees, I thought to myself, why can't I open up and just be honest in front of committees myself? So let me say this.
I'll protect you. Go ahead.
One of the things I learned about Senator Atkinson and he left, I really didn't know him. Testified, he spoke the other day on the history of Oregon on the floor. I said, that's my love, history. And that was impressive. And he just impressed me here, not only with his knowledge, but his humor. So I wanted to compliment him. Please pass that on, because that's my real style, unless I get chewed on by a committee I am to fight back.
Remember, you're signing now.
Yeah, no, I'm going to be in a good mood. You know, there are a lot of things that play into this that makes it very, very complicated above the typical economist arguments. And my minor was economics. I'm sorry, it was U of O with OSU. Here. But I can tell you that you hit an issue, Senator Monroe, when you talked about Washington State, but they also have a gross receipts tax on business. And I am one who realizes Oregon's tax system. I've given probably 500 presentations. I began an organization, Citizens for Oregon's Future, to do what you all wanted, to teach Oregonians how the system worked and why it was broken. So I'm not going to do that other than to say I've ended up, after thousands of hours and probably 30 years of revenue, I served on this committee in 73, 75, I'm at a point where I look at Oregon and I try to step back and not get into the middle of just an individual tax. Because, yes, we have the second highest income tax. We all know that in America. And we have the second personal. We have the second and corporate. And we have the second highest capital gains. But when I look at Oregon in realistic terms, one of the reasons, and I'm in trouble now, I find, by some legislators, and I don't care anymore. I'm too old. The fact of the matter is I support economic development strongly. You don't see other public employee unions stepping up and supporting Coos Bay and the deepening of the bay. You don't see them coming out in front of supporting Oasis, because I need water to grow my biofuels that we want for clean air and my clean air initiative that I'm involved with. That's, by the way, jobs. You don't see other public employee union supporting OTIA. I want to compliment Senator Starr. I'll get a compliment to each of you here.
I'm waiting.
And you, Senator George, because that right now has over 20,000 employees working on highways and bridges that are bringing millions into this general fund. And I did, by the way, not just door-to-door, played a major role in that issue in the end to help it pass. Connect Oregon, similar. And then I just finished. I'm sorry I did. It depressed me, and you, Senator Starr, is aware of this. If we have a major issue in Oregon right now that needs to be dealt with in terms of jobs and economic growth and versus money for houses, et cetera, outpacing everything else is congestion. And why I say that to you, after I read the Port of Portland report and I read the business report, I read the reports, they're this thick, I realize, oh, my God, we face not only in Medford, Ashland, your district, Portland Metro, the business saying, bye-bye, Oregon. We can't deal with our trucks waiting for 50, 60 minutes. So I will support what it takes to fix that as a top priority to me, and it happens to be Senator Starr's. But I happen to be there because I need not only that issue fixed, because I'm a practical person who says, we're just not going to get to where I want to go, because I've been trying for many, many years. Therefore, I've got to help create jobs. Now, when I look at the budget here, I go, hold it. You have been handcuffed, legislators, not by you, by the public. They passed Measure 5, they passed Measure 4750, they passed Measure 11, and what I've asked is, by the way, that's 50% of your general fund goes to fund the programs the public passed in those three initiatives. And then I look at this year's budget, all epitomize my concern with the issue in front of me. I've got, on the one hand, money that was available We've gone K-12, and I'm not into arguing any one budget. But I can't support community colleges, which changed my life when I got out of the Air Force, having been a juvenile, still an old juvenile, but then I was really an active young one. I went to a community college, and NRU, I got to go to U of O, big deal, and then I got to get a graduate degree at PSU. So I've been all over the state in schools. And the fact of the matter is our budgets are all out of whack here in Oregon. And one thing that's rarely mentioned is, and where I am probably a progressive conservative to some, you'll find some think, hey, why is he for OASIS and I'm getting chewed out for it? The fact of the matter is I'm very progressive when I understand that why you don't have the money for the programs where I disagree for citizens for the tax who want no new taxes. You'll hear me tomorrow on state police. Okay? I'm beer. May as well know it up front. You'll also hear what I think about the lottery for community colleges and higher ed getting more money. You're going to hear me opening up because you don't have the option right now to decrease either our personal income tax, our corporate income tax, or our capital gains in the real world. By the way, I support that. I'm one who thinks with the Morse, Deckert, Schrader, Westling proposal, Ralph Groener has been a supporter of that kind of proposal for years, because if we were to reduce the middle income tax, that's me, by the way, it's my philosophy, kind of naive, just a little economics down that I had, would show that if you do that, you got more spendable income coming to the middle income. By the way, now you've really generated an economy moving, and we've got a tax rate that really, really is not fair. It's rather flat for the middle income and upper. I'm actually upper, but I'm old.
I knew you'd.
I finally got there, upper. But we pay our fair taxes. So my fundamental of taxes is to balance my checkbook. Oregon can't balance its current checkbook because of the measures the public have passed, and because of that, we have got to change the tax structure one way or another. Do it whatever you believe. Frankly, I doubt the citizens of Oregon, I'm sorry I've become cynical, will go along with what I believe. I'm probably 10%, but I'll keep harping it. But as a result, I work exceedingly hard on creating new jobs to pay corporate and personal income taxes, and I'll take a stand whether it alienates certain groups or not to do that. And some say, why does a public employee union do that? You got to be joshing me. My members depend on income taxes coming into this building, but they also depend at the city level on property taxes, and my counties on county taxes. So I've got to have it. Love to reduce. By the way, that isn't unfair. It is to me, capital gains should be reduced, but so should your personal rate. Okay, and so should the corporate rate. And it has, by the way. If you go back to when I served here, when it was, what, at 18%? That's the one that has reduced. Sorry. Now I'll be in trouble there. But the fact of the matter is, until we can come up with another tax system, which some of the senators are stepping out on, courageously in my view, others will say they're dummies. I don't. I think they're courageous. I happen to think they're statesmen. Similarly, I think you are for your whistleblower statute, and I thank you all very much for allowing one public employee union to espouse its point of view. Thank you.
Senator.
No, I want to hear from Jody.
Get that bill signed now.
For the record, Jody Weiser with Tax Fairness Oregon, which is an all-volunteer citizens group working to assure that taxes fall fairly and are evenly enforced. You know, at the federal level, legislators have been fooled into thinking that favoring income from investment over income from work is a good idea. But almost all states join Oregon in taxing work and wealth, or work and investment, at the same rate. We happen to have a high income tax rate, and capital gains is income, just like other income. Yet it's the common thread in the bills before you, Senate bills 902, 903, 904, and 585. Reduce the capital gains tax is kind of the core of all of those bills. Let's look at reality. You have before you a handout. It shows that if I'm working and I already have a taxable income of $40,000 and I decide I want to earn another $5,000 this year, what happens to me if I do that? Well, I have three ways I might earn that money. I might become self-employed and start a business. I might get a job and get a W-2. Or I might sell stock and realize $5,000 that way. If I start a business washing windows for Macy's and I realize $5,000 worth of gain, I'll pay taxes at 44.5% on that $5,000 that I realize. If I get a job being a clerk at Macy's, I'll pay taxes at 41%. But if I simply sell my Macy's stock and realize $5,000 in gain, I'll pay 23%. Now, that's already a huge advantage for those of us who don't have to go to work. And it's not a trend that Oregon should espouse as our value system is. We want to value people who invest. We want to value people who don't have to go to work more than we value people who go to work every day. A much bigger job. I can tell you when I was a teacher, it was far harder than going four times a year to my investment advisor is now. So I think that we just need to look at those facts, and we've already in our society valued capital gains as though it were some kind of magic, better than work, and we don't in Oregon want to jump on that bandwagon. There are various reasons given to push Oregon's capital gains tax down. The most frequent we hear are that our tax rate deters venture capital and that folks move to Nevada or Vancouver. Well, let's look at the truth of some of that. If you look at the chart that both Chris and I have given you on capital gains, you can see capital gains in Oregon is growing. Well, that would indicate that people who pay capital gains are moving to Oregon. And, in fact, we are one of the fastest-growing states in the country. And people are moving here without regard to our tax rate on capital gains. That's awfully clear. Or that would be going down.
Jody, I'm showing that those are hypothetical numbers and that we're actually showing a decrease in 05, 06, 07.
In 1 year, there's a decrease. And actually, you'd have to ask Chris why that is. I don't know. I don't understand that. I do know that as an investor, not being positive what was going to happen at the federal level, I did some stock sales that I might have held off on. And so I've got a high year of taxes that are going to drop back down. That's how we do pay attention to that kind of stuff. It could be also that we allowed foreign corporations to bring money home at a very, very low rate, and a lot of corporations did that. That was the federal government's act, but it's going to affect Oregon's taxation. And we also had one shareholder who sold $1 billion worth of assets. That would affect it, I would imagine.
Mr. Chair, yeah, the reason for the... Now, there's a difference. The handout that Jody provided was from the September forecast.
Mm, okay.
And the information I provided is from the March forecast. So they're updated numbers. And for the March forecast, it's just a one-year drop from 05 to 06, and that's primarily because of a handful of taxpayers who realized significant gains in that year, and it is not expected to occur again.
It's not a trend.
Mm-hmm. Correct. They're viewed as isolated incidences.
Okay.
It looks like right now, for the most part, we've got taxpayers in Oregon that are selling $4.4 billion worth of assets and coming up with $400 million worth of revenue for the state that they're willing to pay. We do know of individuals who have moved out of state. But if you look at our state, think of the people who have stayed. The two people who we know are billionaires, because Forbes magazine tells us so, have not moved. Les Schwab hasn't moved. Sid Dreier hasn't moved. The Schnitzers haven't moved. A lot of really fine people have stayed in the state and paid that tax. And I think we need to remember that instead of remembering those who choose to leave. It also would look like, from the dip and the turnaround that we've seen in the history of our state, that in fact, with our current capital gains rate, our economy has turned around. It isn't the deciding factor. When you're an investor, your decisions aren't based on what are the taxes going to be. But you know what? I've got some pre-IPO investments. I don't ever ask, oh, where have they signed up as a business? I look at the concept. Does this concept look good? Do the people who are running this concept look like they're going to be able to take it to market and make money on it? And then the second point is the concern that people won't bring money here and invest in venture capital because we have a high tax rate. Well, people don't have to move to Oregon to invest in Oregon. And I think they're talking about people like people in California don't want to invest their money here. Well, they're going to pay taxes in California on the $1 million gain. They're not going to pay taxes here. If they send us $10 million and they invest it in some Oregon startup and it makes $10 million for them, they're going to pay tax rate in California, and their tax rate is 1.3% higher than ours if you've got big capital gains. And they have lots of venture capital. So obviously venture capital doesn't run away from taxes. It runs towards good ideas instead. It seems to me that we also have to remember that our tax structure is a reflection of our values. And it really doesn't make sense to tax doctors and truck drivers, accountants and electricians and engineers at a rate for their work that is higher than what we would tax someone who doesn't need to go to work in order to live. Thank you.
Well said.
All right. Very well. Well, we accomplished what we hoped we would, and that is good debate, very, very productive, and we thank each one of you that have been able to testify today. I don't think there's anyone else signed up, so with that, I'm going to begin to shut this thing down, if that's all right with you, and we're going to close the public hearing on 902, we better do that afterwards, and Senate Bill 903, 904, and Senate Bill 585. And with the next half of that gavel, we're adjourned. Thank you, guys.